Organic farming is steadily increasing. That's good.
Pour parler d'agriculture et d'Europe à la jeunesse.
Der Klimawandel erfasst immer weitere Teile der Welt.
Farmers help us bring nature back and preserve biodiversity.
Ceux qui sont dans le rouge s'en sortent quand ils font plus vert.
La qualité dans ce pays, elle doit être là pour tous.
Welcome to the latest episode of Food for Europe. And if you've been following this series, you know we're not shy about confronting some of agriculture's biggest challenges, whether it's climate change, biodiversity, competition from imports, rural development, or food safety. Farming faces some daunting difficulties, and it's farmers that bear the brunt. There are 17 million of them in the EU, working in a sector that absorbs a third of EU spending. That's why the Strategic Dialogue has been launched by the President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen. It's an inclusive, consensus-based approach for stakeholders throughout the agri-food sector to listen to and learn from each other as they discuss and debate the farming of the future. The chair of the Strategic Dialogue, the individual with the responsibility to bring all these strands together in a coherent and forward-looking manner over the next few months, is Professor Peter Strohschneider. And Food for Europe travelled to Munich to meet him for this 41st episode of the series. Professor Peter Strohschneider, we're very grateful for you making the time to talk to us.
Good afternoon.
Let's first talk about you. You're not a farmer, you're not in the food production business, you're not a soil scientist. You are, in fact, a medieval historian. So I'm curious as to whether you, yourself, think you're the right person to lead what is a highly technical exercise.
Whether I'm the right person must turn out over the next months. But it's true I'm a medievalist by training and profession, or I'd rather say I was a medievalist by training and profession. That's some time ago. Between 2005 and 2020, I was mostly in research and higher education management on national and international levels, especially as a chair of the German Science and Humanities Council, which is a quite influential, impactful advisory negotiation body between scientists and politicians, and after that as a president of the German Research Foundation, not a tiny institution in the German research ecosystem.
And so where do you see your added value in this process?
The added value, if you want, is somewhat indirect, I would say. What I can bring into that process is independence. I can also bring some familiarity with political processes and an experience in, I would say, structuring very complex issues jointly, and an experience in chairing, moderating difficult, heterogeneous committees.
Let's move on to the Strategic Dialogue itself. Let's look first at its focus, its mandate, the questions that it will answer.
Now, the mandate for the Strategic Dialogue is very clear. It sets out four questions that are interlinked and that we should answer. How can farmers and rural communities they live in, how can they be given a better perspective, including a fair standard of living? Second, how can agriculture be supported within the boundaries of our planet and its ecosystems? Third question, how can better use be made of the immense opportunities offered by knowledge and technological innovation? And the last question, how can a bright and thriving future for Europe's food system be promoted in a competitive world?
And above that, what's the strategic part of the Strategic Dialogue?
And above that is the overarching task, I would say, to describe ways of future European agricultural politics and policies in which, as the president put it, in which agriculture and protection of the natural world can go hand in hand. Therefore, the strategic dialogue reports not to one single commissioner. It reports directly to the president. And as you can see from these guiding questions I just quoted, as well as from the members of the strategic dialogue, it is an endeavor that is not restricted to a very narrow focus on farming itself. The screen is much wider and even more complex.
What's your approach to managing the dialogue itself at a practical level, the discussions face to face?
What I can say from my side is part of the strategy, if strategy would be the right notion, is certainly keeping the discussions at the level of complexity of the challenges. And this means, in our case, I would say this means prevent ecological, economic, and social sustainability from being played off against each other. This means to make it probable that people can see, debating, negotiating, people can see, first, there could also be reasonable arguments in favor of the opposite position. And secondly, that people can see my own position is not entirely free from internal tensions, from internal contradictions. And my opponents will see that, of course. So I find it extremely important to have a certain capacity of self-distancing, of taking the perspective of the others. But this is far from being spectacular. It's simply what the pluralistic open society constantly, I would say, demands of its citizens.
In your view, to what extent is the strategic dialogue about further adjustments to the common agricultural policy?
What the strategic dialogue can do, I think, is help to develop a common understanding on an agreed pathway for the future of agricultural politics in the EU. But it should also be considered that agricultural politics is more than the CAP only. The central question, in my view, is how can farmers have a decent income and reduce negative externalities at the same time? This is the systematically core question. And the CAP is one component in this, but only one. Why not having other financial resources to create income for farmers? Food prices, reducing power asymmetries in the food chain, remuneration of ecosystem services, and so forth, and so forth.
You're taking on this role at a time when farmers across Europe are expressing their frustration, they're demonstrating, they're drawing attention to what they say are existential threats to their livelihoods. Don't you feel a bit under pressure from this upsurge of rural anger?
Not really. It's not so long ago that I said yes to chairing the strategic dialogue. I would say the protests or these farmers' movements throughout Europe show how timely the strategic dialogue, in fact, is. They show how crucial it is to overcome a type of conflict in which an improvement for farming is always seen as a deterioration of environment and vice versa. And then to repeat public protest movements and consultation processes in a pre-political or a para-political sphere, as the strategic dialogue, I could say, these are different forms of negotiating social questions, social problems, and I think they should be kept distinct. Of course, you have to listen to the concerns of the farmers, but the strategic dialogue is not about everyday politics, mentoring, ongoing conflicts on a daily basis.
Well, it may not be about everyday politics, but so much of the common agricultural policy budget is dispersed at member state level, and agriculture remains such a sensitive political issue at national level, as our forthcoming podcast from the Salon de l'Agriculture in Paris will demonstrate. So what are you doing to take on board the views of national parliamentarians and stakeholders in this process?
The question of legitimacy that you just alluded to is, of course, also a question that occurs when you ask how do recommendations of commissions or processes like the strategic dialogue fuel into politics. And of course, the importance of national politics has grown over the last years, also within the CAP framework, of course. But one has to take into account that agricultural policy is the most Europeanized political field or policy area on the continent. And one has also to see that the strategic dialogue has a very tight schedule, and that means we will focus on the European level. But of course, exchange with the Council and the European Parliament is a self-evident task of the chair, and it has already begun. The strategic dialogue has already been presented in the Comagri and in the Agrifish Council. And I would also remind you that several member states already have done similar dialogue processes on national levels, like, for example, in Ireland and in the Netherlands.
Tell me more generally about the inputs you'll receive as you go about your work, where those inputs come from.
The core group of the strategic dialogue has been selected, invited and mandated by the President of the European Commission and comprises representatives from farming organizations, representatives from environmental organizations, representatives from the entire food chain, food industry, trade, consumers protection, and so forth, and also members from academia. Beyond that, beyond this core group, we will start a targeted consultation within the next few days, actually. And in this target consultation, which is addressed to dozens, almost hundreds of addressees, in this targeted consultation, as well as in the strategic dialogue itself, I would expect trade regimes to play an important role, a very important role, I think. An important role as also issues of the value chain will play, or should I rather say issues of the value network, which is highly interlinked and interdependent with global trade and food and feed and energy dimensions.
We've seen how pressure in the agriculture sector can lead to the dilution of climate and environment policies. So surely some climate and environment stakeholders are right to be sceptical about this strategic dialogue.
Let me start by saying climate neutrality and the mitigation of the losses of biodiversity is a paramount goal of the European Union, and the strategic dialogue with all its members is committed to this paramount goal. But it is of not but. At the same time, it is of equal importance that farmers can do sustainable farming and earn money from that. And for the strategic dialogue, I would say trust is a crucial component. Trust not only in the fairness of the chairperson, but also trust among the members of the strategic dialogue. This trust is a decisive condition for the creation of a confidential space in which arguments and consented strategies, I'd say, can then be developed and examined. And what the outcome of that might be, even with respect to the scepticism you alluded to, is an open question.
Tell me a bit about the practical ways in which the strategic dialogue framework has started to function, the methods.
Yeah, we are building up. We are layering off problems. We are layering off them by establishing working groups. We've already installed four working groups along those four guiding questions that I paraphrased earlier. And we try to build up specific consensuses on specific issues, bottom up in a way, from the members' input to the working groups, which then should be negotiated in, and in the best case, be consented, and fueling that in into plenary discussions, which then again have to find a consensus on specific issues. And thus, step by step, building the, how shall I say, the consented material for then drafting a final report to the president.
A final question, or rather a pair of linked questions. Do you contemplate the possibility that the strategic dialogue could fail? And considering the farmer's calendar, what is your time frame for delivery?
Failure is always possible, not only in politics, but also in the pre-political field. The failure, I would say, would not be that we are unable to draft a final report. I'm very positive that that will happen. But the failure could be that this final report is too vague, too abstract, so that it does not really become politically impactful. And political impact, again, does not mean that by the end of this year the recommendations are applied to practical European politics. Impact can also be generated over years, even over decades. But a failure would be a vague, imprecise, and politically not impactful draft report. Now, to the farmer's calendar, the president's expectation is to get a final report by the end of summer. My hope is that we can reap the fruits of our labour at harvest time. And I would hope that the strategic dialogue marks the beginning of a positive change in the forms of dialogue between the parties involved. Because it's about working together for the benefit of all. And in times like these, shared areas of trust, of confidentiality, and open dialogue are also necessary to ensure the well-functioning of the democratic decision-making politics.
Professor Peter Strohschneider, thanks for coming on Food for Europe, and we wish you all the best with this important job.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Professor Peter Strohschneider there, chair of the Strategic Dialogue, which is starting its work in earnest with a view, as he said, to producing a report at the end of summer, which is when, of course, a new European Commission will start to take shape on the back of the European Parliament election. We look forward to hearing more news and to bringing you more news about the Strategic Dialogue over the course of this year. But that's all for this episode of Food for Europe. Join us again in a couple of weeks when we'll have a special report from the recent Salon de l'Agriculture, the French farming and food industry's annual show in Paris. We look forward to your company then.
Organic farming is steadily increasing. That's good.
Pour parler d'agriculture et d'Europe à la jeunesse.
Der Klimawandel erfasst immer weitere Teile der Welt.
Farmers help us bring nature back and preserve biodiversity.
Ceux qui sont dans le rouge s'en sortent quand ils font plus vert.
La qualité dans ce pays, elle doit être là pour tous.